Meditate with the first book of Corinthians, chapter 7, and concerning our studies. We have it. Last week, we had 1 Corinthians chapter 7, we look at verse 1 to 5. And if I remember, Apostle Paul was speaking about matters relating to marriage and Christian marriage in particular. And this came about because the Corinthian church wrote to him to ask him his instructions on the marriage. So he also wrote, he replied, and in that reply he gave us instructions which are useful. All Christians concerned marriage. So we continue. So the whole passage, the whole chapter is about marriage matters. So we continue from verse 6 onwards in the same subject. So Christian principles on marriage. Christian principles on marriage. So this is part 2 of the same subject. So we continue from verse 6. But I speak this by permission and not of commandment. Words of Apostle Paul. There have been varied explanations to the word here. Some think that what he says here refers to what he had said generally about marriage from verse 1 downwards to verse 5. Some also think that it refers particularly to verse 5 and somehow part of the continued verses up to, I think, but whatever way, what he says here, we also can look through and we can see that in verse 5. He had advice about he gave advice to husbands and wives that by consent they can, if there's a need to fast and pray, they can be separated for a while and also come back again for a short time. And this was to their own discretion. They decide when to do that and when also to come back. So looking at what he has said in that verse in verse 5, it seems best to link verse 6 to verse 5 because the other verses from verse 2 downwards up to verse 4, all the instructions he gave about husbands and their wives, we can see that they are commands which were implied in the Genesis chapter 2, verse 24, where we are told, therefore shall a man leave his father and his wife, and shall cleave unto his wife, and they shall dwell there. So in that union, the duties one to another, these are implied because no Christian marriage can avoid the instructions given here, and it has to be part of that the husband or the man leaves his father and mother and join to his wife to become one flesh. And so that instructions has in connection with these words of the Lord here. So we see that when he told them that they can separate and join back again, and that is their own expression, all the other parts, they cannot decide on that. They cannot choose to give themselves to that support. For instance, verse 3, let the husband render unto the wife with benevolence, likewise also the wife unto the husband. A husband or wife cannot choose to do this or not. And also therefore the wife has no power over her body, likewise the husband. Wife or husband cannot choose to decide whether this should be obeyed or not. It's something which has to be done. But the part which is to their discretion is the verse 5, where they are separating for a time and also coming back together again. So this was left to the discretion of the husband and wife, and that they decide when it is proper to do. And we see that here the Lord has left for the married couple to decide on this matter. So, and Apostle Paul just gave his own advice on that matter, looking at how it is convenient for the married couple so that it will be useful to them. So we see that what he said, that but I speak this by permission, not of commandment, we can be linked to that verse 5. It can be linked to that verse 5, and also some of the other parts where he says, especially verse 7, for I would that all men were even as myself. Here is his wish, it's not a direct command, the meaning of such things. So, in those parts where he gives his counsels, this is where this verse 6, when God in verse 10, look at what it says, and unto the married I command, yet not by the Lord. So, giving out where there's a direct command from the Lord and where his counsels coming. And so that if we say that by this, but I speak this by permission and not of commandment, it doesn't mean that he has not received a direct command from the Lord, but as himself, as an apostle, he gave his instruction, which will be useful for the Christian life. So that is what we say. So, as we know, that the same way a pastor or a mature Christian can give advice to other Christians on life, practical life matters, Apostle Paul, as an apostle, who is also a wise Christian, has that liberty to give practical life counsels to believers, though in such counsels, it is not binding. It is not binding because it's not a direct command. It's not binding. It's not a direct command. And this, because, for instance, verse 7, he says that, for I would that all men were even as myself. So that this is his wish, and that he speaks in the manner that he wished, something that he wished all were, but himself, as we go, he said that he knew that all men don't have that gift he wished they should have. So, in such a case, the instructions given under that, and himself will say that the other part was a direct command from the Lord. So the Lord was for distinguishing that which is a direct, command from the Lord, and that which he also gives as his counsel or example, as his practical counsel for them. So, as I said, those counsels he gives, we know it's not a direct command from the Lord, and it is something that is not binding as the command of the Lord himself. So we may choose to take it or not. For instance, as I said, why is it that they can separate for a while for fasting and prayer and also come back again? It is left to their discretion. Well, at what time they do that and as to the extent, there's no command that a day, 2 weeks, 3 months, no, there's no command about that. That well, we can decide to separate because of the fasting and prayers for about a week. No, each couples have their own discretion to choose. There's no direct command as to how long that seems to be done. So those are the that is connected to his advice. Again, his word about his giving his counsel, his permission to give counsel and not as a command. This also reminds us that for as I said, advices for mature Christians on the Christian life to a younger Christian, it is so mandatory. What if it is not directly commanded by the Lord? But then, whatever advice is given, if it is good for our spiritual, if it is for spiritual good, it will be the way our wisdom to take it. For instance, if from a young Christian has an issue with probably work matters and she doesn't he doesn't really know what decision to take. Then maybe the mature Christian has really gone through such things and he has not had the Lord help him with kind of decision he made. He can give advice. And as I said, it will be a wisdom on the part of the younger Christian to take, because as the Lord bless the older one in the same path, though there may not be a direct command about the situation, the Lord also bless it, so long as it's advice, which is to promote a spiritual good. That's what I said. If it is, to promote spiritual good. And in the case of Apostle's advice, it is to promote, because he said that it is to prevent temptation from Satan. So definitely, it's a good advice to be taken. Though it's not a direct command, but it's a good advice, because to prevent temptation, when the devil is, can really come in. So it is his advice, and it is a good advice for us as Christians. And I remember one commentator said, the Bible scholar said, well, this shows how Apostle Paul's writings are so genuine for those that are directly given to his senses, and those that is shown by his senses. And no one who wouldn't want to be genuine would do that. Maybe his own counsels, he will bring it as an inspiration, as if it is from the Lord. And as we know, other religious books have, whatever their leader says, it is taken as quote unquote, inspired in the essence. But as I said, this is advice to us, and it's a good thing. And again, this also informs us about practical advices from those who have been, who have matured in the faith. We know that is why sometimes we read good books, good Christian books. What is the reason we read? It is to take counsel from Christians who have really lived a Christian life and have experience to give us, and we read and take their counsels for our lives. So he continued verse 7, for I will that all men were even as myself, that every man had his proper gifts of God, one after this manner, and another after that. So you see how you connect that verse 6 to this this verse. For I will that all men were even as I myself, but every man had his proper gift of God, one after this manner, and another after that. Again, before I move on, let's remember Apostle Paul. If you look at what he's saying, you might be tempted to say, well, Apostle Paul is saying that, well, the way that all men are married like himself. But that's not the idea here. But before we move on, that's Apostle Paul's reference, how he preferred the Omari state to that of the married. Mostly, it is due to the distressing condition the believers were in at the time. For instance, verse 26, he tells us, he hinted us on this. He says, verse 26, I suppose therefore that this is good for the present distress. I say that it is good for a man so to be, referring to that, so that they remained unmarried, that the virgins were not given to marry the other, because of the present distress, so that Apostle Paul preferences, as we may say, this was about the unmarried state. It's not that it's something that he really supports, that men ought not to marry, and it's a good thing to say, but it's because of their current distress, the trouble that the believers were in, and he, as a Christian, as a mature Christian, he knew that the unmarried will be able to easily bear the troubles of the Christian life than the married people. And that is his thought in all these passages about why. He may say that, not to marry is probably a good thing for us as Christians. I'm saying it because there are some Christian groups who think that celibate Christians are better than the married. Those who remain unmarried as Christians, they see as a better way of Christian life, but it's never true. I'm sure we know some churches see the unmarried people and Christians as holy people. But it's never true. That's not the argument that was false. I said, of course, those people also derive their principles from this verse of Apostle Paul, where they think that Apostle Paul is saying that, well, your marriage state, the Christian who is unmarried is better than the one who is married. It's never true. That's not what he's trying to say. All that he's saying about your marriage state, where he seems to say is better, is because of the current situation that those believers were in, which will really be useful to them in that situation. And he considered that, for I would that all men were even as I myself. So here he wished the unmarried believers were able, this is what he means here, that the unmarried believers were able in their current distress to keep themselves so that marriage doesn't become a necessity to them. That marriage doesn't become a necessity to them. And that is his wish. He's not wishing that they will do marriage. I mean, some people have also by saying that he means that he was not married at the time. We cannot say. But first, he says that men should be as himself because that condition where they're able to control themselves. But no, marriage is a necessity. It's very useful for that particular situation. Because if I was forced to say men should be as himself as unmarried, as if marriage is wrong, then he himself will speak against what the Lord has ordained as marriage. But he's not speaking about that. He's saying that all men were even as I myself, as where he had the grace to keep himself out of marriage and then continue the Christian life. So the way that Christian men have the same gift of being able to restrain themselves, and that such was the wish of Apostle Paul. That in an unmarried state, the Christian should be able to keep themselves or have the grace of self-restraint, so that when Christians in the state of unmarried state are able to keep themselves, have the grace of self-restraint, it will keep them from sexual sins, the temptations to sexual sins, because in Numbers chapter 7 verse 1, you see one of the things he said about marriage is that verse 1, now concerning the thing whereof he wrote unto me, it is good for a man not to touch a woman, nevertheless, to avoid fornication, let every man have his own wife, and let every woman have her own husband. So you see, so that in the state of unmarried, in the state where the believer is unmarried, if he doesn't have the grace of self-restraint, temptation to sexual moralities will be a great thing for the unmarried. So he desired that in that state where they are unmarried, they ought to, he wished that they have the same grace of self-restraint as himself, to be able to keep themselves from sexual sins. And what he wishes here is, the grace he wishes here, grace of self-restraint. He said this is a very important thing for every unmarried Christian, a single Christian, female or female, man or woman, is the grace that ought to be sought after. Because it's the only grace that will keep the person who is unmarried pure from sexual sins. And it's needed to keep the body pure from defilement. So, Apostle Paul wished that all men here have to do with Christian, because all this is talking about Christian marriage and Christian men and women. For I would that all men were, even as I myself, have this gift to keep themselves from sexual sins, power or marriage, in that state where they are married. And he continues, but every man has his proper gift of God, one after this manner, and another after that, and another after that. So this one gives us understanding of what he says, for I would that all men were even as myself. Particular kind of virtue in that state of unmarried, that unmarried state, which will keep the believing from self-defilement. Again, we refer back to chapter, the verse 2, that he said that marriage is good, so that if you do not marry, it's good, but to avoid fornication, let each one marry. Let each one marry. But then, he wished that even in that state of trouble, in that state of distress, Christian men have that grace of self-restraint. But although he wished that all will have that, by himself, every man has his proper gift of God, one after this manner, and another after that manner. So here he says that he knows that not all of us do not excel in the same virtue. Each one of us have a particular virtue that we excel in. So the gift of God, this spiritual gifts that are given to us as believers, each one of us excels in one, and another also excels in another. So, although he wished that the unmarried to have the gift of self-restraint, which in that grace it would be good for them in the current distress they were in, yet he knew that not all are capable to remain in an unmarried state. Even in that current condition where it is difficult to marry, because to keep the married life in that time of persecution brings many inconveniences. And you know that not all of them have that gift, so and some may have to marry. You see, some may have to marry. So he shows that even in that condition, though he wished that men are able to restrain themselves from marriage so that they can able to be able to live through that distress, times of distress, yet he knew that marriage was possible, will be proper for some of them, because not all of them have the same gift of self-restraint, where they are able to keep themselves from marriage, so that if they don't marry, it doesn't become trouble for them. They're able to keep themselves pure. Not all of them will be able to go through that. Not all of them will be able to go through that. Because they, but every man has his proper gift of God, one after this manner and another after that. So, look at what he says verse 8. Because of that, God, he knew that none of us will be able to live without marrying. Some have to marry because of their condition. He says, I said therefore to your married and widows, it is good for them if they abide even as I. You see, if they abide, and this gives us idea that Apostle Paul was not to be married himself. Because he has spoken about what he wished that their marriage should be, should remain or married, and have he wished that they will have that grace to restrain themselves in that sense. And then he has said that he knew that not all of us may have the same a gift to continue in that state of singleness. But he said that I said therefore if you're married, the widows, it's good for them if they abide even after. It is good to do so, but will all of them be able to do so? That's the question which he will tell us in the next verse. That he knew that will tell us, he knew that not all the unmarried will be able to keep themselves from marriage. In that state. So he says that although he knew that not all Christians are able to remain unmarried, yet he says it is good for the unmarried to remain so. It's something good, but something that all cannot remain in the same position. It is good for that condition, so that when believers are not married in that troubled times, the Christian life, it will be easier for them to have the convenience to really live as Christians, because their responsibilities will be less. Yet, though that it is good to remain, yet you know that not all are able to continue on marriage in that state. So that you know it will become a necessity for some to marry. And yet you wish that all of them who are married will abide in that state where, like himself was at the time, when he wasn't probably married because of what he's saying. So the unmarried and the widows, which all are who stands in the same position, widows we know are those whose spouses are no more, but the unmarried will refer to those who are yet who have not married at all. But he said that it's good for them if they abide in that state. But as I say, we connect it to that, his concern that they have that grace of self restraint. Have that grace of self-restraint. And his advice here that it is good that they do their abide, it is good for their time of persecution. And as we know that the inconveniences of the married life in such a time will be greater than those who are married. I mean, you have wife, you have children, and while you have husband, you have children, and your responsibilities at the time will be so quiet. I mean, probably, you know, in their time, I mean, they have to maybe run to another city. I mean, one of the troubles and all that. How are you going to manage with the family life? So his advice was for that time and the condition that they were in, that it's good for them to abide or to remain unmarried, so that it will be easier for them to bear the troubles that will come after them. Remember, for Paul himself, if he was to move about, look at his genius at the time and the trouble that he faced. I mean, such a man, you cannot keep, I mean, a marriage in that kind of situation. And we don't know the other believers what they were also going through. Remember, in Jerusalem, there was persecution, they have to run. And some have to go to Samaria and others. And those with families will really have to bear much difficulty than those without families. So, his advice, as I said, have to. Is in connection with the persecution and the troubles that the believers were in at the time. But look at verse 9. But if they cannot contain, let them marry, or is it better to marry than to bear? So you see, this also gives us light to what you have been saying, that it's not saying that marriage is bad, but even in that, I mean, current distress, where it is difficult probably to keep a marriage, I mean, life to be married, where it was distressing because of the troubles of the time. And it may be convenient if a Christian do not marry in that condition. Yet, even in such times, a Christian is at liberty to marry if it is difficult for such as one to remain single. So he says that he wished that people, I mean the believers, I mean who were single or married then, would be able to have the grace to restrain themselves. And yet, even in that difficult situation, if they are not, some are not able to continue in that life, they have to marry. See, that's what he's saying. So that if they are not able, he has already also said in verse 7, the last part, that every man has his proper gift of God, one after this manner, and another after that. You see? So he knew that. So that if you can connect verse 9 to that verse, but if they cannot contend, if they can do not have that that grace to restrain themselves, let them marry. Connect to that. For it is better to marry than to bear, whereby lust and passion will rise up, so that the unmarried will be tempted for sexual sins. You see, fornication, as he said, he told us that marriage was to prevent. So if they cannot contend, they cannot restrain, they were going to restrain, that gift of self-restraint, which he had wished that all the unmarried should have at the time. And which he said, therefore, to the marriage, it is good for them to be abiding in us, so long as they have that gift of self restraint, so that when they are not married, they are not really bonded with sexual sins. But if they cannot contain, if they cannot continue in that sin, let them marry. For it is better to marry than to bear. So we see that it is better. For the Christians to marry even in that difficult situation, so marriage will bring conveniences to them. And this teaches all unmarried Christians that it is better for them to marry so as to prevent them from temptations to sexual sins than remain unmarried due to inconveniences of married life. So that, I'm a young Christian. Probably my life, I have so many inconveniences, but I have reached this time of marriage, and if I am not able to restrain myself, it is better to marry. You see, nowadays, I mean, I think people have many goals they want to achieve before they marry. I'm sure we are aware, many young people. Have friends and they wish forever to have a house, have a car before they marry. And the Christian shouldn't think like that. Well, if you're not married, that's fine. Perhaps they want to have a job where they will pay so and so before they marry. Well, a Christian should never think like that. You see? The concern is that people who think like that, often they're happy to stay in a probably immoral and all that, and so they want to achieve something before they marry. No, because the inconveniences that marriage will bring you is better than to stay in a position where you don't have that gift of self-restraint, where sexual sins will become a temptation to you. Which one do you choose? Apostle Paul advised here, that's what it means. That though the situation that they were in, it would be inconvenient probably for them to marry. But for the sake of fornication, those that will not be able to contend, let them marry. And again, we apply to ourselves in that situation. You see? So that if I have, I'm able to work and take care of myself, and by the Lord's help, I can really go ahead to marry, why not? I shouldn't, entertain the idea that we want to achieve this, and that some people, they want to even have such and so degree, and well, they want to finish whatever they have given before they marry. No, the Christians don't have that. Fine, if you are able to restrain yourself. That's the question. I've got into a marriage, stage in life, and I'm a Christian, and I'm able to marry.
And shouldn't let the inconvenience of a married life to be a distraction from marriage. Some also seem not to put the idea of marriage in their mind because they think, well, when they marry, last time I said, marriage will inconvenience their life. So this particular goes to many of the young women. They say, well, when I marry, I give birth and well, children, and oh, no, no, because I have many things to pursue. The Christians don't think of that. We don't think of the convenience of life while we sin. No. We think of honoring the Lord, and the advice of Apostle Paul here has to do with that. Look at the Christians at the time. It was time for persecution. And as I pictured the life at the Jerusalem persecution, where the believer had to run, I mean, just from one city to the other. Even in that state, in that condition, when men or women have to marry, they should marry. So that they because the troubles are not sin, is the fornication or the sexual sin that will become sinful. So you see, though we may be troubled, we have inconveniences, but if we have to marry, we should help, ask the Lord to help us, and then He'll provide us to marry. That is better than to, I mean, that all those unnecessary ideas about I want to achieve this, I want to do this, and many young people somehow want, of course, I see that like they want to be, it's like irresponsible lifestyle. Well, they think, well, when I marry, then I have to really become careful with my things. Well, I want to be free to do as I please. No. The inconveniences of married life should not prevent us from marrying. No. The inconvenience, we should never think of the inconveniences that if we have reached the age of marriage, well, fine, if we will not marry and we have the grace of service, that's fine. Because many, some may not have to marry, that's fine. It's no wrong not to marry. But if you have to marry, then, and you are in a position, the condition that if you don't marry, sexual sins will become a temptation to you, then you have to really plan as a Christian, because it is better for Pastor Paul says here to marry and have the inconveniences than to them. With lust and temptations that will indeed make you not pure before the eyes of the Lord. So that is it for the Pastor Paul says. So that his argument from his words from verse from verse 6 downwards, we can see that his idea that people should not, it is better for them not to marry, as I've already said, has to do with if only the Christians have the grace of self-restraint. Because if you do not have self-restraint, marriage is a must, might be a must for you. Yes, that's what I'm saying. Because it's something that would rather keep you pure than be afraid of the inconveniences and then continue in that state where the Lord will disown it. So, we move on to verse 10 and 11. And unto the married, I command, yet not I, but the Lord, let not a wife depart from her husband, and if she depart, let her remain unmarried, or be reconciled to her husband, and let not the husband put away his wife. And here is the command to the married Christians against divorce. Against divorce, the depart we find a verse about separation from husband or wife, and as we find it here. So let not the wife depart from her husband, so that the wife should not depart from the husband on account of probably a disagreement. I'm sure we have witnessed many, people who have separated, what there's a misunderstanding about something. It can be some trivial thing to figure things in their own eyes, and then they want to divorce. But not to the Christian, so let not the wife depart from her husband. And here it has to do with probably there's a disagreement. There's kind of contention between them. Isn't it? No, that's not a location to live. But if she departs, let her remain unmarried or be reconciled to her husband. That is, however, there may be situations where maybe the wife may have to depart, and I'm sure practically there's things like there's abuse, where there's fightings and beatings. Sometimes it's advisable for them to separate so that the issues may be resolved, and probably in such a situation, If she departs, that's we are just thinking through. But there will be a situation where probably the wife has to depart. Probably there's abuses, fighting, and beatings, and all that. The wife may have to separate so that the issue may be resolved, which is wise. And in such a situation, let her remain unmarried. That the separation does not call for divorce. But there's probably as I said, I mean the most serious thing we can think of where there's beatings and fightings and all that, and that will have to call for probably a separation for some time. And even that trouble, the wife she must not think she's divorced from the husband. She must not be married to another man because of the troubles in the marriage. That's what you are being told. But rather, she must seek for reconciliation to her husband. There must be, a means to reconcile. The issue must be resolved. What about the troubles that brought her to probably divorce? Is that she must not depart, but as Apostle Paul said, but if she departs, depending on the situation, she must remain unmarried. Again, this is about Christian marriage. You know, the world doesn't care about this. I've seen many some marriages. Well, a few many things small things. Then the woman of the partner thing and go. And she doesn't care. But the Christian doesn't do that. No, Christian doesn't. Just wake up and pack their things and go. No, the Christian is keeping a command. Let not the wife depart from her husband. That is it. And even if in a serious situation she has to depart, she is still the wife of the husband. The departer, because of the trouble, has not separated them. In the eyes of God, they are still married. Let her rather seek for reconciliation. That's what she has to do. That's the direction. That is the direction given here. And reconcile to her husband. That is what the action to be done. So if that she even is separated, let her again as she goes think of reconciliation. And then we are called the same thing for the husband. And let not the husband put away his wife. You know, it's men that marry, that is why. So men, women are married, so they can live. That's the picture. But men marry, so they can. They can what? Also say, well, I'm not marrying you. So in the same thing, the man shouldn't say, well, the marriage is so troublesome. No, to the Christian, no. For us, as I said, the worldly do that, but to the Christian, no. We don't say, that is advice for every life. We don't say, for me, this life is troublesome, I'm fed up. No, the Christian is so fed up, we take our matters to the Lord, and we try to solve issues by His instructions, you see? The wife is giving that. She must not depart. And if she departs, she must be reconciled. And that's what their wife has to do. As a Christian woman, that's the purpose, that is what must come to her mind if she's even has to be separated for some time from the husband because of the trouble. And for the husband, let not the husband put away his wife. The husband, no matter how and whatever it is, the same law applies. The husband's, the marriage, as we have seen, joins the husband and wife to be one. So the issue of divorce shouldn't come in at all. But you know human nature and how sin has brought us into this state. But we know the Lord Jesus Christ gave only one ground for divorce in Matthew 5:31-32. He said that it has been here He was reproving the Jews of the earth. For them they have had so many laws about divorce, and the Lord told them because of their disobedience, Moses allowed them. So for some issue, you can just write a bill of divorce and you take it to the law, and then you are free. He says, no, you report because of your stubbornness that Moses gave you that law. So he says, it has been said, whosoever shall put away his wife, let him give her the writing of divorcement. This is what Moses allowed them to do because they say, because of their stubbornness. But I say unto you that whosoever shall put away his wife, here is divorce. Saving for the cause of fornication, causes her to commit adultery, and whosoever shall marry her, that is divorce, committed adultery. So, say that unless case of adultery, in the case of fornication, where probably there will be, even with that, still it can be resolved if truly the married couples want to continue. For the Christians, it can be resolved. God is telling. But is it that is the only case probably where they call for separation in that marriage. And if people are, I mean, two people who are married, I mean, husband and wife are separated, and if one goes to marry, it's adultery. In that separation, for us, after, so the wife is not supposed to separate, she separated, then that's the world, I'm not going back to marry again. She goes to marry. In the eyes of the Lord, the marriage is not dissolved. You go, I mean, I think that the first, we tell, the only thing that dissolves marriage actually is death, when one partner dies. Also then, in the eyes of the Lord, marriage is forever. You know, but that's why they say, until then, do us part. That vow that people say in their wedding, until then, do us part, and then they marry and troubles come, well, they want to separate. So what's that? As I said the other time, marriage vows, God takes records of marriage vows. Marriage vows are promises, and every promise, God is the witness, whether they are Christians or not. So that until then, do us part, we say it, and then in a few years, we are happy. No, the Lord doesn't support that. So that even if the marriage is taken to law court, and the court dissolves it, in the eyes of the Lord, it's not dissolved. For the Christian, civil laws, except it goes in line with the word of God, it doesn't bind us. You see? It doesn't bind us. If it really goes against the will of God, no. So that, you know, people think, well, the marriage was taken to God, and the court dissolved it. No. The Lord says, if there's a departure, there should be reconciliation. I should not just go and I go to the Lord for, well, my husband or my wife, so I'm divorced. And then the Lord, the court says, well, the marriage is divorced. No. Whoever marries in that state is still called adultery. As I said, to the eyes of the world, it's okay, but to the Christian, no. This is a Christian. These commands are for us Christians, those of us who the Lord has saved for himself. Again, remember how the Lord, I mean, we are told that we are the Lord. The body is for him. So that in whatever way we should use the body, only the Lord can give us commandment. And here we are told about marriage, what the Lord commands us about marriage. And what the body has to be used for, which is lawful. But then, we also talk the unlawful part, even in marriage, about divorce. We'll continue next week and look up at other connecting verses to this issue of departure and the issue of separation for the Christian. May the Lord help us as we think about these things.